Welcome to A Crash Investigation, the podcast, the show where we dissect and discuss prominent crashes in aviation history. I'm your host, Kai Jordan, and in today's episode, we're going to be discussing British Airways Flight 38. The crew, the crash, the investigation. You know the drill if you've been listening to this podcast for a while. But before we continue, if you're listening on a podcast listening platform such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and so many more, do not forget to rate us 5 stars and, of course, follow us there so that you never miss a new episode. Secondly, if you're listening on YouTube, do not forget to hit the like button and subscribe, as that will mean the world to me. Now, I don't know if you know this, but I run this podcast by myself. I've been doing it ever since the beginning. And as a result, you know, there's a lot of work that comes with podcast making. And so that is why there are different avenues such as Buy Me a Coffee and Patreon, where you can support the podcast. I can improve things such as buy a new microphone so we can make the sound quality better and probably like have more visuals in terms of you actually seeing me actually talk about these crashes. Hopefully that made sense. But basically check out our Patreon, Buy Me a Coffee. I'm about to establish a PayPal because I think that would be like an easier alternative to Buy Me a Coffee. So just look out for that. But either way, just check out our Patreon and Buy Me a Coffee. All of those links will be in the description box below. Finally, before we get started, check out our Instagram. I post all about the podcast and stuff like that, so you can just check that out. And our Twitter, everything will be in the description box below, so do not worry about that. But finally, we can officially get started. So, British Airways Flight 38 was a scheduled flight for the 17th of January 2008. Its origin was Beijing Capital International Airport in China, and its destination was London Heathrow International Airport in the United Kingdom. The operator of this flight was British Airways, and the aircraft that was used was the famous Boeing 777. The call sign was Speedbird 38. And have you also noticed that British Airways has this thing where they just call each and every aircraft or every flight a Speedbird? I wonder why. I genuinely wonder why. If you know the reason, please put it in the description box below, because it fascinates me a little bit. So the crew and the passengers, the captain of this flight was Peter Burkill, who was 43 years old at the time of the crash. He was qualified to fly the Lockheed 1011, DC-10 and the Boeing 777, aka the accident aircraft. In total, he had 12,700 flight hours with 8,450 flight hours on the accident aircraft. His instrument rating, quote-unquote qualification, for lack of a better word, was valid until the 31st of October 2008, aka Halloween. Captain Burkill's proficiency test or check was valid until the 6th of April 2008, and he had no limitations when flying. The senior first officer was John Coward, who was 41 years old at the time of the crash. His surname is kind of throwing me off a little bit, but we move on. Now, a senior first officer, if you do not know, is a pilot who is quote-unquote command ready. This means that they, and I quote, are ready to be promoted to captain but are waiting for a position to become available, end quote. If you are a pilot, please just check me in the comments and like just make sure that I am correct, because I found this on Google and Google can be wrong most of the time. So please just let me know. But basically, if you're wondering the difference between a senior first officer and a regular first officer, is that's basically what it is. A first officer is just a regular first officer, and a senior first officer is a pilot who is waiting for a position of captain to be available in that specific airline, but they're just going to be working as a first officer until that position is available. Hopefully that makes sense. Just fingers crossed that made sense. If it didn't, I'm so sorry. Either way, he was qualified to fly the Boeing 737 and the Boeing 777. He had a total of 9,000 flight hours with 7,000 flight hours on the accident aircraft, and he had no limitations, just like the captain. Finally, we have the first officer of this flight, was Connor McGinnis, was 35 years old. He was qualified to fly the AVROR-J, the BAE-146, the Boeing 737 and Boeing 777. He had a total of 5,000 flight hours with 1,120 flight hours on the Boeing 777. So, we are back to the difference between senior first officer and first officer. So, basically, it kind of sounds like they do the same thing. And they do. They do the same thing. The only difference would be that the senior first officer would have more flight experience. Like in this case of British Airways Flight 38, senior first officer Coward had 9,000 flight hours, whereas first officer McGinnis had a total of 5,000 flight hours. That does not make first officer McGinnis a less qualified pilot, but with everything, especially in aviation, there comes a level of seniority. So senior first officer Coward will sit in the first officer seat, whilst first officer McGinnis will sit in the flight engineer seat. Hopefully that makes sense. The flight. So this flight was a return flight back to London Heathrow. Speed Bird 38 took off from Beijing at 9 minutes past 2 a.m. The route was as follows. Climb initially to 10,400 meters or 34,100 feet. Then you would pass the waypoints in Mongolia, Siberia and Scandinavia. Then when you reach London Heathrow, you will land via ILS or through the instrument landing system. Seems easy enough, but we wouldn't be talking about this if thing went according to plan. The climb was smooth and at about 34,800 feet or 10,607 meters, the temperatures in the atmosphere were about minus 74 degrees Celsius or minus 101 degrees Fahrenheit, which is incredibly cold. The crew thus had to continuously monitor the temperature of the fuel due to the atmosphere, because if the temperature of the fuel decreases past minus 58 degrees Celsius or minus 72 degrees Fahrenheit, it will freeze and it will not float the engines, meaning that the plane will essentially fall from the sky. Regardless of the temperature, the flight was uneventful, and after a while it is time for the Speedbird 38 to land at London Heathrow. British Airways Flight 38 starts to descend towards the airport. Before the aeroplane could land, it was put into a holding pattern at Lambourne at 11,000 feet or 3,353 meters for 5 minutes. After the 5 minutes were up, Speedbird 38 was instructed to descend to 9,000 feet or 2,743 meters and vector to an ILS approach to runway 27 left. At 800 feet AAL or 244 meters, First Officer McGinnis took control of the aircraft. The crew then started by increasing the thrust through autothrottle. The autothrottle was working until 50 seconds before touchdown, when it stopped. The thrust was reducing and the engine started to fail slowly. They tried to increase the throttle but they were unsuccessful. Speed started to drop fast as hell, and as they were dropping, the airspeed low warning enunciated. Now, as you can imagine, if you were in that situation, you would be panicking. Like, I would also be panicking, because what is going on? And just in general, I genuinely want to know what you would do in that situation, because I would probably cry and then panic and then probably come up with a solution. But that's what these people also did. But they didn't cry though. As a result, Captain Buckle reduced the flap setting from 30 degrees to 25 degrees so that they could stretch the glide for longer, since there was no fuel going into the engines. At 18 minutes to 1 p.m., the jet passed over the A30 highway, which I think is a major road in the United Kingdom, and it had traffic, which made it even worse. So that would be a scary scenario for the crew and passengers of the Speedbird 38 aircraft. After 600 feet AAL or 183 meters, the stick shaker operated just 10 seconds before impact. This meant that the aircraft was nearing a stall due to lack of airspeed. To increase the airspeed, First Officer McGinnis pushed the control column forward. When he did that, the autopilot disconnected, which meant that he was going to land the plane manually. The captain tried to restart the auxiliary power unit or APU, but was unsuccessful, and he decided to declare an emergency with the Heathrow Air Traffic Control. Before the aeroplane landed, the crew decided to raise the flaps so that they do not hit the ILS beacon. That would cause less damage. As much as these precautions were done, and I quote, the aircraft struck the ground in the grass undershoot 427 left, approximately 330 meters or 1,083 feet short of the paved runway surface, and 110 meters or 361 feet inside the airfield perimeter fence, end quote. And as much as that may sound incredibly horrific, everyone on board survived this crash. The aftermath of the crash. So after the jet landed, people who were injured were taken to the nearby Hillingdon Hospital, and whilst the airport was trying to clear the runway and stuff like that, all flights in and out of London Heathrow were stopped and diverted. The investigation. So this crash slash incident was investigated by the Air Accidents Investigation Branch, or AAIB, of the United Kingdom. This investigation was supported by the National Transportation Safety Board, or NTSB, Rolls-Royce, aka the maker of the engine, and Boeing. Now, the reason why the NTSB was involved in this was probably because Rolls-Royce is there and Boeing is there. I also don't know, but you know, the NTSB gets involved with a lot of stuff. So the survival aspects. So a passenger who was sitting in seat 30K had a serious injury but was helped by a fellow passenger. So that low-key brings back my faith in humanity. The cabin crew evacuated everyone in the plane and then they went down the escape slides. Luckily, there was no fire, which meant that there was a lesser risk and people could actually survive this crash. However, fuel was still leaking from the tanks and oxygen was leaking from the passenger oxygen cylinders, which basically meant that a fire could start. But despite it all, this accident was a survivable one. The crash site. So the accident site was, and I quote, grass area situated between the airfield's internal perimeter road and the eastern end of runway 27 left, end quote. The initial impact was 110 meters or 361 feet inside the airfield's perimeter fence. Moreover, circuit breakers within the aircraft tripped. The ones that were found to have tripped were the circuit breaker B4, which protects the power supply circuit to the engine fuel shut-off valve on the engine's fuel metering unit, and circuit breaker A18, which protects the power supply circuit to the left spar valve, end quote. That was a lot of technical stuff. I also don't know what it means, basically, but yeah, if you know what it means, yay. The nose landing gear separated from the aeroplane. Moreover, the left main landing gear partially separated from the aeroplane due to the overload, but it still remained attached to the fuselage. Overall, the aircraft was a complete write-off and would never fly again. The meteorological information. So we're going to start off with the meteorological information of Beijing, as this is where this flight originated. So with Beijing, and I quote, the Beijing Departure Automatic Terminal Information Service, or ATIS, for 17 January 2008 reported a surface wind from 090 degrees at 3 meters per second, approximately 6 knots with 5 kilometers visibility, and a temperature of minus 7 degrees Celsius, a dew point of minus 16 degrees Celsius, and a QNH of 10,039 MB. The short-term forecast was for a little change other than temporary reductions in the visibility to 3,500 meters in light showers of snow. End quote. Then mid-flight, as they're flying towards Siberia, estimated temperatures at flight level 348 or 34,800 feet were around minus 65 degrees Celsius, giving the aircraft an estimated TAT of minus 37 degrees Celsius. The upper winds at this altitude were from the west at around 20 knots, end quote. Finally, we have the conditions at London Heathrow. The Heathrow weather was mild at the time of the accident. The arrival ATIS at 20 minutes to 1 p.m. on 17 January 2008 was sea and reported a wind from 200 degrees at 10 knots with a visibility of over 10 kilometers, scattered cloud at 800 feet or 244 meters and broken cloud at 10,000 feet or 305 meters. The surface temperature was 10 degrees Celsius with a dew point of 8 degrees Celsius. There was a warning moderate icing in the vicinity of the Bovington Beacon, approximately 15 nautical miles north of Heathrow at flight level 090. End quote. Meaning that these conditions, to be honest, they were not optimal for flying, but the airplane should not have failed like that. Or is there something else? Because the fact that it was cold meant that, oh, what if something froze and then it led to the crash? I don't know why I'm doing that, but I think you know where I am going with this, because this is very suspicious. So the testing of the aircraft. The fact that the aircraft wasn't totally destroyed helped with the investigation. Moreover, the fact that the passengers and the crew were alive meant that they could be witnesses to what happened in this crash and explain what actually happened. So the first thing that the investigation board investigated was the ability of the pilots to fly as always, because that's what they always do. After some investigation, they came to the conclusion that the pilots' flying abilities weren't the problem. So they decided to investigate the systems of the aircraft. The auxiliary power unit, or APU. So during the flight portion of this episode, I did mention that Captain Burkle tried to restart the APU, but he was unsuccessful. The investigators agreed that he did try to restart the APU as the RAM air turbine, or RAT, was not deployed. They really should change that name. But anyway, let's move on to the crossfeed valve. So if you do not know, just like me, a crossfeed valve is a system in an aeroplane whereby fuel or oil is transferred from engine to engine or from tank to tank. If you want to know where I got all of this information, you can of course check the links in the description. Anyways, it was found that the crossfeed valves were closed but the forward valve was open. This meant that there was no fuel flowing from the tanks to the engine, which meant that the engines could not operate and thus would lead to what we saw with the landing of the aircraft. Moreover, there was the presence of water in the fuel tanks. So according to my research, presence of water in the fuel tanks is a common thing, as some water droplets will enter the fuel tanks during the refueling process. But remember that the conditions in which Speedbird 38 were flying in were very cold, and when water experiences temperatures under 0 degrees Celsius, it will freeze. So it was possible that the water droplets entered the fuel tank during the fueling process, as I had mentioned. Then when the aircraft experienced the cold weather in Scandinavia, Siberia, Mongolia, the United Kingdom, Beijing, the water droplets froze by the crossfeed valve, which meant that the fuel could no longer flow. Thus, the engine thrust didn't want to increase, and thus led to the Speedbird falling from the sky. So the findings. There were a ton of findings, and I'm not going to read them here because there were too many to list, but essentially they explain what I just explained right now. So the cause, and I quote, whilst on approach London Heathrow from Beijing, China at 700 feet AGL or 219 meters, the right engine of this flight ceased responding to auto throttle commands for increased power, and instead the power reduced to 1.03 engine pressure ratio, or EPR. This reduction led to a loss of airspeed and the aircraft touching down some 330 meters or 1,083 feet short of the paved surface of runway 27 left at London Heathrow. The investigation identified that the reduction in thrust was due to restricted fuel flow to both engines. It was determined that this restriction occurred on the right engine at its fuel or oil heat exchanger, or FOHE. For the left engine, the investigation concluded that the restriction most likely occurred is FOHE. However, due to limitations in available recorded data, it was not possible totally to eliminate the possibility of a restriction elsewhere in the fuel system. Furthermore, the likelihood of a separate restriction mechanism occurring within 7 seconds of that for the right engine was determined to be very low. The investigation identified the following probable causal factors that led to the fuel flow restrictions. Number one, accreted, sorry if I said that wrong, ice from within the fuel system released, causing a restriction to the engine fuel flow at the face of the FOHE on both engines. Number two, ice had formed within the fuel system from water that occurred naturally in the fuel, whilst the aircraft operated with low fuel flows over a long period of time and the localized fuel temperatures were in an area described as the sticky range. Number three, the FOHE, although compliant with the applicable certification requirements, was shown to be susceptible to restriction when presented with soft ice in a high concentration with a fuel temperature that is below minus 10 degrees Celsius and a fuel flow above flight idle. Number four, certification requirements with which the aircraft and engine fuel systems had to comply did not take to account of this phenomenon as the risk was unrecognized at the time. End quote. Basically, all I said, the cause of this crash was water in the fuel tanks, which then froze or created some kind of slush thing, and the FOHE could not handle that, and thus it led to what we saw with Speedbird 38. So the recommendations, I have a lot of recommendations. I know this episode is kind of long, but I'm almost done. So number one, safety recommendation 2008-047. It is recommended that the Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, and the European Aviation Safety Agency, in conjunction with Boeing and Rolls-Royce, introduce interim measures for the Boeing 777 powered by Trent 800 engines to reduce the risk of ice formed from water and aviation turbine fuel, causing a restriction in the fuel feed system. Number two, safety recommendation 2008-048. It is recommended that the Federal Aviation Administration and European Aviation Safety Agency should take immediate action to consider the implications of the findings of this investigation and on other certified airframe / engine combinations. Number three, safety recommendation 2008-049. It is recommended that the FAA and European Aviation Safety Agency review the current certification requirements to ensure that aircraft and engine fuel systems are tolerant. I'm sorry if my counting is a bit off. I am so sorry, but let's move on. It is recommended that the Federal Aviation Administration and the European Aviation Safety Agency consider mandating design changes that are introduced as a result of Recommendation 2009-028, developed to prevent ice from causing a restriction to the fuel flow at the fuel oil heat exchanger on Boeing 777 aircraft powered by Rolls-Royce Trent 800 engines. Safety Recommendation 2009-030. It is recommended that the Federal Aviation Administration and the European Aviation Safety Agency conduct a study into the feasibility of expanding the use of anti-ice additives in aviation turbine fuel on civil aircraft. Safety Recommendation 2009-031. It is recommended that the FAA and the European Aviation Safety Agency jointly conduct research into ice formation in aviation turbine fuels. And then the last one, safety recommendation 2009-032. It is recommended that the FAA and the European Aviation Safety Agency jointly conduct research into ice accumulation and subsequent release mechanisms within aircraft and engine fuel systems. End quote. Of course, there are more, because there's always more, but I'm not going to read all of that because this episode is long enough. But that is the end of today's episode and the story of British Airways Flight 38. Let me know what you think in the comments if you're listening on YouTube or anywhere else where you can reach me. Just overall, I think that when it comes to British Airways aeroplanes, I've never truly heard of like a real crash. Like, it's always they have a problem and then they solve it, kind of, and then they crash but everyone survives. It's kind of weird to think about, but it's kind of cool. It's also very sad as to how British Airways, I don't think, is operating under Comair in South Africa. That is very, very, very weird and high-key very upsetting, because British Airways, I think, around the world is considered to be the best or one of the best airlines. But I don't know why I just had to go on that little tangent. Apologies for that. But either way, that is the end of today's episode. Please let me know what you think. Check out all of our links in the description and that type of stuff. I say our, I don't know why, when I know it's just me. But just check out the links in the description. Okay. Thank you so much for listening and being so patient with me and the rolling out of these episodes. Apologies for that. Please let me know if you either want like long episodes every 2 weeks or like shorter episodes every week. Because then if I do the two, or if I do a shorter episode every week, then it's just going to be less detailed. So I don't know if you want to wait or if you don't want to wait. So let me know about that. But once again, thank you so much for listening. I truly appreciate your support, and I will catch you in the next episode. Cheers!